up this week on trying to do things the way that I normally do things, and I decided I had to do things a bit backward for today. Normally what I would do is I would offer a reading, and then that reading would lead into some sermon that would be a reflection. But today we're talking about John Dietrich, who is a minister. And in trying to encapsulate his words, I finally gave up and said, I need to just share his words with you. So first I'll tell you a little bit about him, and then I want to read a little lengthier reading than what I would normally do. In 1933, the Humanist Manifesto was written. It was the first time that the philosophy or the life stance of humanism had kind of been codified. It had been taken, and just like we have these seven principles, there were principles written down and said, this is what humanism means. And in fact, some of those seven principles that Unitarian Universalists have adopted came from that first Humanist Manifesto in 1933. And a lot of the language from that document was taken from John Dietrich, who was a Unitarian minister. He's known as the father of religious humanism. He was a Reformed Presbyterian minister first from 1905 to 1911, and eventually he was defrocked for failing to affirm primary Christian beliefs. Things like the divinity of Jesus, which was kind of important to them. So then he began serving Unitarian churches. And he was a big influence on the incorporation of humanism into Unitarian theology. And I want to let his words speak for themselves. I'm not going to give you an entire sermon of John Dietrich, because apparently he did not mind people sitting and listening to him talk for an hour. So I'm going to take some sections out, so we'll keep it short. But I do want to say that Reverend Dietrich had some flaws in his thinking. He lived in a time when a lot of scientifically minded people who wanted the best for humanity believed that eugenics was a viable solution for society's ills. So if you read some things that John Dietrich wrote, he was a preacher of his time, so he writes some things about the wonders of eugenics. And if you're not familiar with eugenics, it's a misguided theory that selective breeding can eradicate criminal behavior, essentially, or just undesirable behavior. Eugenics held that some people were just genetically disposed to be criminals, and it had a lot of supporters in the early 20th century. We understand a little better now the flaws with that theory, as well as the unethical policies and conclusions eugenics can lead to. But that doesn't mean that Reverend Dietrich didn't have something of value to offer. And I hope that by letting his words speak for themselves, you'll better have an understanding of his perspective, and also maybe an understanding of how that perspective speaks to our current time, even though we're 100 years later than when he was writing these words. So he asks, what would happen if the world became humanist? That's, of course, a purely hypothetical question, because I don't have any illusion about the world, at least within my lifetime, giving up what it conceives to be the consolations of theistic religion. I doubt very much if the world will ever become entirely humanist. No doubt there will always be some who indulge in their appetite for God, for finality, for an explanation of the universe that gives them a sense of security and the happiness that comes from thinking they are enfolded in the everlasting arms. But what if the world became humanist? There are some, even some humanists, who think it would not be a good idea for everybody to become humanist. I presume this thought is based on the feeling that if the restraint of authoritative religion were removed from people, then the masses would react with a dangerous form of irresponsibility and immorality and inhuman activity. In short, that the people just haven't reached a point of responsibility yet that they can safely be released from the old restraints of final authority. That may be true, but it's entirely a different thing than having the entire world become humanist, because to become humanist doesn't merely mean throwing off the yoke of an old religion. It means assuming personal responsibility for the things that previously were supposed to rest with God. If the world actually became humanist, that is, if all of the people should accept the humanist point of view and attain a humanist attitude of mind, there couldn't be any possibility of an immoral reaction. The result would be in the opposite direction. There are also those who believe that if everybody became humanist, that it would be disastrous because people would be robbed of comfort and hope. This again implies a misunderstanding. Humanism doesn't rob people of anything that actually exists. It only takes from people their comforting illusions and substitutes for them consolations that are real and hopes that are realizable. It is true that humanism calls upon one to give up the comforting thought of the fatherhood of God and the favoritism of a kindly providence, but it substitutes for these the assurances of the inflexible impartiality of immutable law, whereby we can control and direct our own lives, and the almost ecstatic joy that comes from realizing that we are earth children and terminable thrusts of the cosmic life. From the feeling of divine thrill of the shared life as we strive together toward our common destiny. And as for hope, humanism may rob people of a dream of Elysian fields or Valhallas or New Jerusalems, but it substitutes for them the entrancing vision of a better world of human life here upon the good brown earth. Humanism sets before us a great world hope and pictures a civilization in which people can live satisfying, fulfilling lives. Humanism may take away some of the old comforts, but it offers others more convincing. We can be heartened by the homey, happy, human relations here on earth, and a vision of a beautiful world that has haunted the minds of people for centuries. Our sojourn here can be a wonder-awakening romance, a pilgrimage through mysteries and marvels, and as we walk together, comforting each other, inspiring each other, helping each other, loving each other, our hearts burn within us. If the world became humanist, it would simply mean that humanity had settled down to the job of living, of wresting from human life the satisfactions that we desire, by bringing to bear upon the situation all of the intelligence and effort that we can command, without any expectation of outside help. People would immediately discard all the fantastic theories that we've woven about the universe and see it as revealed by modern science. We would realize that this little planet on which we live is almost lost in our solar system, with its thousands of millions of miles of space, and that this solar system is merely a point of light in the vast deeps of the stars that form our universe. And that beyond our universe are others, universe beyond universe, on to unimaginable depths of space. Yet here we are, on this tiny little lost world, battling for life, trying by cooperative effort to build a home, a satisfying, beautiful home for the children of Earth, striving in spite of many defeats to entrench ourselves in a world indifferent to the things that we value. And if the world became humanist, it would simply mean that humanity had settled down to this job of cooperating with the planet as a habitation for human life, the discovery and the utilization of nature's boundless powers, the working out of the difficult issues of personal, group, international, and racial relationships, the reconstruction of civilization, the provision of a favorable environment for the generations to come, the adjustment of individual appetites and tendencies and urges for social well-being. Humanism means the realization of our racial destiny as human beings, the general agreement that we shall work together to make the best of the human situation. We're all in the same fix, all in life's predicament, all confronted with insoluble problems, unanswerable questions, unrealized ideals. We all have a common origin, a common purpose, and a common future. We're here on this planet, enveloped and penetrated by mysterious forces, empowered with astonishing abilities, equipped with an intelligence that enables us to remember our past and plan for our future? How we came here may be interesting to speculate upon, but it's merely an amusement for leisure moments. Humanity is here, and we must make the best of it. We're so sensitively related to each other that we can make each other miserable, adding to the hardships that already exist in our lives. On the other hand, we can ameliorate those hardships, cooperate with nature and with one another, gradually discover and chart the paths to happiness, become more and more at home in the universe and more expert in dealing with our fellow human beings, and more approach the ideal of a satisfactory human society. We are precisely like a group of men and women isolated on an island in the Pacific who, instead of dreaming of what they would do if they ever escaped, set to work in the endeavor to make the place habitable and the living comfortable. There are trees to be felled, clearings to be made, stumps to be pulled, soil to be cultivated, houses to be built, grain to be reaped, children to be cared for, sickness to be cured, justice to be provided. The human family has the same task on a magnified and vastly more complicated scale. The recognition that such is the case and the hearty turning to it is all there is to humanism. The result of such a venture is difficult to predict. About all one can try to imagine is what results would follow if humanity as a whole sought to make the greatest use of all education, all advance in science, all beneficial forms of social organization, all art and music, all well-grounded efforts. What if humanity decided to make the greatest and most beneficial use of all that informs and refines and strengthens and ennobles human character? Again, we can't predict the outcome of a humanistic world, because humanism doesn't have a fixed, fantastic objective. It follows a moving goalpost. It simply clears the mind and simplifies life at one stroke by the abandonment of hope of divine aid and the fear of divine judgment. It would simply set humanity to work in humanity's interest, and not in the interest of some superior being or in the interest of some life to come. It would simply mean that the whole of humanity had agreed to work under a banner that reads, "A better world for better people through better cooperation." I presume the only way we can faintly surmise what would happen if the world went humanist is to consider the probable results of the application of some of the principles of humanism. For instance, the very basic foundation of humanism is the insistence that people are an end and not a means toward something else, not a mere instrument to some other unrelated purpose. Therefore, if the world became humanist, it would mean that immediately all people would begin to treat themselves and others as ends to themselves, not as means to some other goal. We can picture the results of this only by contemplating the extent to which people are treated as means today. In particularly every religious scheme, people are considered only means to the glorification and service of a God. Therefore, the ideology of religion would immediately become human-centered instead of God-centered. In our whole industrial scheme today, people are thought of as means only to the end of production with its resulting profits, with the result that human life has become subservient to the things we possess. So if the world became humanist, our industry would immediately change this whole idea, making human life the end, and production just the means to the enrichment of human life. In our international relations, people are considered only means and are gathered up and hurled into battle by governments who have economic interests to protect and nationalistic aims to further. In family life, the rights and happiness of various members are frequently considered but means to the selfish interests of the head of the house, whether male or female. In fact, most of the age-old brutalities of history, as well as the cruelties and foul play of the present time, are but examples of human beings using others as means to carry out their purposes and designs. All of this would be reversed if the world became humanist. And our whole social system would be built around this idea. Every institution that now exists would be placed under the closest scrutiny to determine whether it's making a real contribution to human life. And if not, it would have to give way to institutions that did. This means an entire reconstruction of our ideology of industry. Look at the present hour. The simple fact that our whole industrial system is built around the idea of property instead of human life. Our captains of industry won't embark on new enterprises, won't even set the wheels in motion until they're convinced that they will make profits. The first thought is, will it pay in dollars? And no thought of what it means for human life. I'm not claiming now that this isn't justified by our system. I'm simply saying that under the present system, the question of human needs isn't the primary consideration. Whereas, under the banner of humanism, it would be. Again, tremendous strides would take place through the study and application of science to human life, because the humanist would immediately substitute human inquiry for divine revelation as a means of finding truth and understanding human experience. Instead of reading supposed divine books and bowing before priests, all people would investigate facts and verify those facts and form hypotheses based on those facts. The scientific method would become universal. And when we stop to think of the tremendous advances made by science in the last generation, we can only faintly conceive of the possibilities ahead. Because this humanistic method has added more to the sum total of knowledge in the last century than the old method added in 100 centuries. It's only within the last few years that we've really gained true knowledge about ourselves and the world in which we live. And as this knowledge increases and becomes potent in the lives of many, it will sweep humanity along to higher and higher levels, to mounts of achievement that are beyond our scope at the present moment. We can't possibly conceive of the benefits to humankind once we all use the natural sciences for the understanding and the stewardship of our environment. And when we use the human sciences for guidance and support of human behavior. For you must remember that humanism is the effort to enrich the human experience to the utmost capacity of humanity, all of humanity, and our environment, by bringing to bear all of the intelligence that we can command. Therefore, in a humanist world, every person would regard as a sacred obligation the study of biological and psychological and economic and social factors that make for the ruin or the salvation of humankind. In short, if the world became humanist, all the immense fortunes that have thus far been swallowed up in the engulfing crater of war, and the billions of dollars now being spent in preparation for the next war, would be expended in the intensification of agriculture, the building of roads and waterways, municipal projects, and all that goes into improving human life. People would no longer die before their time or suffer much while living, because every child born into the world would be well born. We would have conquered the forces of disease, and people would be adequately protected at work by appropriate safety devices. Education would reduce our ignorance and our fears, making of us creative and daring spirits. Ethics would show us more and more clearly the paths of right conduct. And thus, with ignorance and superstition and cruelty and vice giving way to intelligence and justice and love, the people of the earth would dwell together in this earth home, enjoying the fruits of their labor in equity, governed by the law of goodwill and mutual consideration. Is it too hopeful to think that the world could become humanist? Too hopeful to expect that there would be a recognition of the essential unity of humanity? Could we realize that there flows through the whole human race one life and one blood? That we have a common life and a common interest? Can we march on together toward our common purpose and a common ideal, realizing that what hurts one hurts everybody? This would mean the elimination of all racial antagonisms, all national jealousies, all class struggles, religious prejudices, and individual hatreds. All these would dissolve in the realization of human solidarity, in which each person considers himself a cooperative part of the whole, striving toward the commonwealth of humanity, built upon the principles of goodwill and service. This would mean a coordination and synthesis of all our knowledge and powers in the interest of the common good, as well as the mystic joy from consciousness of the shared life with others, whose interests and destiny are bound up with our own. In addition, people, if the world went humanist, would have a much deeper sense of personal responsibility for the conditions of human life and rely on human effort for their improvement. Bereft of expecting any help from God or any other outside source, people themselves would shoulder the responsibility for the present miserable conditions of human life and set to work immediately to improve them. We would realize that the situation is in our hands and that practically all of the evils of the world have been brought upon people by people. We would be frank in assuming the responsibility for all of these evils, and we would know that we ourselves must eradicate them and build a better world, finding no other place for that responsibility than human shoulders, and no other hope of improvement than human effort. The tremendous responsibility of the situation would dawn upon us, and we would look straight into the face of the world of human life and see its good and its bad, and expecting no help from without, determined to make the world a fit place for human living, for a life worth living. Up to now, our responsibility has been weakened by the invention of comforting philosophies of escape and reliance on supernatural aid. But we could see things as they really are. Alone in a terrifying and uncaring universe, we would seek to create and sustain whatever can make human life worthwhile. We would see our lives as very insecure on this lost little planet as it swings through space, and realize that upon us rests the difficult and glorious task of deepening and enriching human life. So when the world becomes humanist, we may have lost God, but we will have discovered humanity. We never knew ourselves before. We never knew what power and wealth we had potentially. We never thought of developing it. Most of us still haven't the least idea of such a thing. People are still thoughtless, engaged in the daily occupation of enjoying ourselves with long hours of boredom, but few hours devoted to that grim exercise, thinking. What a terrible distance we still have to go. But if the world becomes humanist, thinking will fill and transform those hours of boredom, and the work of creation will begin in earnest. The light of a vision of a better earth, in the thrilling consciousness of a new and mighty power, in glorious liberty of mind and heart, men and women will lay the foundations of the civilization that is to come. They will act as if there were no heaven, and the one chance of happiness we have is while the heart still beats. We will all be apostles of the social spirit until a sound standard of conduct rules the world. And then the altars and temples that have so poorly served our forebears will mingle with the ruins of the temples of Jupiter and Osiris, for we will have discovered the secret of life, that we ourselves must do the things we care about, and that they who created the kingdom of God in heaven can create the commonwealth of humanity on earth. A bold vision cast by John Dietrich. And he may not have known it, that when he spoke these words, that these principles would hang on the back of Unitarian Universalist churches and essentially say, the world may not go humanist. The world may not become humanist. But there will be people who care about human life and well-being enough that we covenant together and say, as we heard at the beginning of the service, every person has inherent worth and dignity. How do we live like that? Is John Dietrich's vision too much for us? That we might bring all of our forces, all of our personal power to bear upon creating a better world, contributing to the common good? Do we need to wait for the world to join us? We might be waiting a long time. But in this moment of reflection, I just want to allow us a few moments to consider what we might do in our lives to let our best work be toward building up humanity around us to the best of our personal ability. Let's take just a few moments for reflection. May we have the courage to act in accord with our values in our lives. And now I invite you to rise in body or spirit as we sing together, Break Not the Circle, number 323.